Some question?
What does it mean to focus on the external instead of external, internal instead of external? How can that be realized? And can meditation help?
Can what?
Meditation help to draw your attention to the internal aspect of yours instead of
not
external.
Instead of the external.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, we most often associated with meditation, we hear the word Zen. You know, Zen. What's the Chinese word? No, Chan, right? Right. So they say Chan, the Japanese, Zen. But both words, the etymology, actually comes from Sanskrit. Dhyan. Dhyan. Dhyan is told to be meditation. But Srila Guru Maharaj, he reminds us that meditation is not an abstract thing. The beginning of the Bhagavatam, in first loka, janmadyasya yaton vaya dituratas cha arteshu abhigyasvarat tene brahma hridaya adikavaye muhyanti yatsuraya tejo vari mridam yata vinimayo yatra trishargo mrsha damna svena sada nirastakuhakam satyam param dhimahi. It's dhimahi here means, what should you meditate on? Satyam param, the supreme truth. Is the supreme truth some an abstract concept of, like in a Socratic dialogue, what are you talking about? Truth, beauty, and abstract terms? Or does the truth have a personal representation? But that word dhimahi, which is the same word found in the meditative Gayatri mantras, Guru Maharaj says dhi is a reference to, we can extract from there, buddhi, which means intelligence. So he's saying real meditation means to use your intelligence for seva, actually. Not to just sit in a particular posture and try, you know, as John Lennon said in Tomorrow Never Knows, turn off your mind, relax, and float downstream. Not possible. I remember, because we revered them so much as teenagers, I thought, oh, some message is coming, I have to do this. So I was like, I'm going to turn off my mind, relax, and float downstream. And then the mind is filled with so much imagery. We use the word sangskar, which means mental impressions, lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. Like in art, there's something called the palimpsest, which means sometimes artists, we know they're very poor, so they'd make a painting and they don't have money to buy a new canvas, so they make a painting over that painting and they think, well, it's already primed and this painting isn't so good. And then someone else does the same thing. They have a painting on top of a painting on top of another painting on top of a painting. So whatever it is we're visualizing currently, it's on layers of acquired prejudice and acquired tendency, right? Means lifetime after lifetime. Jalaja Navalakani Stavra Lakavingshati. Padma Purana tells us there are 8,400,000 species. And we can more or less assume as human beings, you've been through them all. And many human lives. So we're carrying acquired mental impressions, the subtle body, mind, intelligence, and ego. So The self, the Atma, our actual identity, is buried under these layers of acquired tendency, acquired prejudice. Otherwise referred to, we can say, Rupa Goswami, Anya Abhilashita Shunyam, Jnana Karma Janavritam, layers of karma and jnana, and the parallel sloka, it's given in the Narada Pancharatra, Sarvupadi Vinirmuktam Tatparatena Nirmalam, Hrishikena Hrishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchate. So this upadi, it's often translated as designation, but the one interesting meaning of this word too is substitutes. So you can say substitute identities for the actual identity. Just as in the Milton phrase on Paradise Lost, you're presented with this prospect in terms of realizing your self potential, your self identity. Do you want to serve in heaven or reign in hell? Right. Be a servant in heaven or master in the material world? Establishing yourself as an absolute center and trying to expand the circumference of your exploiting capacity. Right. This is material life. Jivo jiva shijivanam. One living being living at the expense of another. One living being exploiting another. The world of exploitation. So three worlds we can conceive. The world of exploitation, we're in the present. Then sometimes after so much attempt at exploitation and also suffering the consequences and formed the karmic consequences of exploitation, realizes various types of suffering, one thinks to withdraw from this plane and enter a neutral position, right, where they won't be generating any more karmic reactions, and thinking that this could be a solution to suffering. Right? And that's neutral. If we take it in this example, that the world of exploitation would be negative, the world of renunciation would be neutral. It does not enter the positive domain where serving potential is realized. And mentioned in the Bhagavatam, 10th canto, Aruhya Krishchena Param Padam Tatak Patanti Anho Anadrita Jasmaid Angraya. They may withdraw from this world, apparently be engaged in some sort of intense form of meditation and renunciation, and elevate themselves to the neutral position, right? But again, they will fall down into this world, having not taken shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. What does that mean? The positive service domain, where there's one realizes their identity and serving potential and serving capacity. So the Bhagavatam makes the conclusion, mukti rhitvanyata rupam swarupena vivastiti, that mukti, proper, real liberation, real freedom, is freedom from all these substitute identities and realization, swarupena vivastiti, of the innate serving capacity. So back to the original point, Guru Maharaj is saying, Dhimahi means using your intelligence for seva. Right? This is how really to convert the external into internal. Right? We cannot ignore the external world. So how to convert that? Hrishikena, Hrishikena. Kesa Sevanam Bhakti Ruchite. Fortunately, because we are overwhelmed by the senses. We are sensual people. Sensuality in all types is in our DNA. Seeing, and by that I mean seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling, feeling. These are not just, this is not what we mean by acquired tendencies. Right? These are innate qualities. That's why it's not accidental that the name Hrishikesh is given in this loka. Krishna has so many names, can be thought of in so many different ways. Why use the name Hrishikesh? In other places say Mukunda Seva. And that takes it in another direction, another perspective. But here in this sloka, it's saying, giving up all these substitute identities, what at last will one take shelter? It says, Hrishikena, Hrishikesha, you will use your senses in the service of, we generally render that as master of the senses, but it also means he's really the goal or the target of the senses. Generally, we think spiritual life means, no, you have to give up all sorts of sense activity, do nothing, enter a cell, restrict yourself from everything, and engage in some sort of abstract meditation so that you won't be seduced by the world. And by the world, we can say, we mean the world of the senses, but seen, heard, tasted, touched, felt, experienced. This, I find this word interesting, the etymology of the word aesthetic. Yeah, that's right. So what's the Russian word for that? It's similar, right? What is it? There you go. But you know what it means originally. It's synonymous with the culture of beauty, right? Refined, the beauty, like higher type of beauty. Right? But actually the word means, if you look at the etymology, it says that which is perceived by the senses. So that means that there's sight beauty, sound beauty, taste beauty, touch beauty. Right? So therefore it says that on the one hand, there's this idea, withdraw the senses, turn off your mind, relax and float downstream. Right? But what's being told here is that it doesn't mean, the senses just have to be neutralized. Because they're only capable of dragging you down, so neutralize them. They have no positive function or purpose. They're only to pull you down into the external world. So if you want to go internal, you have to cut off all of that. But what we're being told in Bhagavatam and Krishna conception, there's an internal world where there's actual seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling, feeling, etc., and loving exchange. That is Hrishikesh. It means Lord of the senses, but you think of it in this way, like the ultimate target of the senses might be another way to put this. Lord of the senses in that way. Who is the Lord of seeing would mean seeing the most beautiful thing. Right. So with in reference to the queen Rukmini saying, Shrutva Gunan Bhuvana Sundara Srinvatam Te Nirvishya Karna Vivare Haratanga Tapam Rupam drisham drishimitam akilar talabam twayat chuta vishati patram apatrap chitram vishati chitram apatrapamme. So What I like about this is the context in which she gives voice to this sentiment is, in summary form, we can say she's surrounded by karmic inescapable karmic circumstance. Right? This is spoken or written on the eve of her wedding, or the next day, or betrothal, I guess is more of the proper word. The next day, it's going to be like Swayambara ceremony, where many princes will come and try and, you know, gain the hand of the beautiful princess. Right? And she's inconceivably beautiful and qualified. But what she's saying, so she's, and she appears to be in an inescapable karmic circumstance on the eve of this ceremony. And so she writes a kidnap letter to Krishna, which is very interesting because normally the kidnappers write the letter, right? They say, we've got the girl and you've got to give the money by this time, you know. Something like that, the ransom note. But here, this is very interesting that she's writing a letter to Krishna inviting him to kidnap her. So that's right away, it's very extraordinary. Right? And part of her appeal is she's saying, I'm meant for you. Like, but she's using very strong language. She's saying, what was meant for the lion is taken by the jackals, you know, to compare Krishna the lion and those other princes like jackals. What was meant for the lion cannot be taken by the jackals. And she says many, within five or so verses, she outlines different aspects of like Gaudiya ontology and general spiritual understanding. She speaks about the body and in great detail, she gives sort of a biological scientific analysis of the body and that is very unappealing, right? Because when you look at it from a scientific analytical point of view, it's not so charming as we see and when they do magnification or dissection and different things. As Guru Maharaj once said about the scientists, he said, the scientists, they've ruined the moon. They've ruined the moon for us. Right? Saying because the moon was the subject of forever of romantic poetry. He even mentioned the so-called honeymoon and all these different things. And then they went to the moon and they came back with a bunch of rocks. And they put them in like a museum and all the people would go there and go, so that's moon rocks, huh? Wow. Very disappointing, to see some they just look so ordinary. They weren't shiny like the moon. You expect to see, wow, moon, look, they glow. Wow, it's amazing. In the dark, they glow, They weren't glowing. Everyone was like, what a waste and how much money it cost to go there. And I think they went there 6 or 7 times and then they stopped going. So Guru said, they have spoiled the moon, these scientists. He said, we would rather live in the world of our imagination. Right, where the moon, we look, oh, isn't it a beautiful moonlit night tonight, and it's romantic, and so many things. Right? And so he said, and then from there to, he said, and women, the beauty of women. He said, should we reduce the beauty of women to what we can discover on the dissection table? Right? As I told you, the breasts fascination with breaths, and if they dissect one and they like people, ooh, then they're not so seductive. And Gulliver's Travels by Jonathan Swift, we know the famous, the Lilliputians, where Gulliver is this gigantic being and they're all these little tiny people. That's like part one. Then he goes to another place where he's the tiny and they're all giants. There's four voyages. So in that place, he's given as a gift to a teenage girl as like a birthday present. And she's like, oh, she like keep. And he described, like he's close to this girl, he describes a gigantic breast. And to make the point, like that, if it's inspected that close, he was not finding it very appealing, but rather it was like horrifying him. So he's making a point. I mean, he's using humor, but that point is there. So Gurmar said, laughing, he said, so should we reduce the beauty of woman to what we can discover on the dissection table? He said, no one will agree to this proposal. So he said, so we would rather live in the plane of our imagination. But in her letter, Rukmini, she's describing, like, she's saying why she wants to accept Krishna and only Krishna. And she starts talking about the male form and rather ingloriously about what it's made out of, what you will discover if you dissect that form. And it's, you know, she gives a list that's very like, oh. So she's saying, who could accept that as their Lord and Master? It's a very interesting approach to this. Back to Hrishika Isha, Hrishikesh. Who's the real Lord of what we aspire to see, hear, taste, touch, smell, etc. So many things she says there. But in the first verse, it's very beautifully expressed where she says, Srutva gunan bhuvana sundara srinvatam te. She's telling us about her meditation. Right? Saying, Srutva gunan, when I heard about your qualities, speaking of Krishna, like yang shama sundarama chintra guna swarupam, the threefold beautiful bending form of Krishna, the lotus eyes, lotus face of Krishna, flute of Krishna, etc. She said, when I heard about you, I understood, Bhuvana Sundar, that you are the most beautiful thing in the world. That I could understand. And this tells just one line, half a line. Nama, Rupa, Guna, Leela. It's telling us, from sound form comes. So what is our primary meditation? Chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Nama Rupa Guna Leela. From sound, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes it in the Sharanagati, the form will come out of the sound, not from the eye. So famous verse in the early cantos of the Bhagavatam. Bhakti Yoga is mentioned there. And this tells you what bhakti yoga is. Tom bhakti yoga paribhavita ritsaroja ase shutekshita pato nanu nata pungsang. Interesting, it says shruta ikshita, shutekshita. How do you see spiritually? By hearing. That's how you see. That's how you get spiritual vision. This is how you meditate. By hearing Shabda Brahman, spiritual sound, then the right concept, if you do this faithfully under the guidance of Guru and Vaishnava, as seva, Rishika Isha, seva, the ear seva to the Lord of the ear. thing of the Lord of the Ear, meaning what the ear's ultimate aspiration and hearing could be, will reveal the form of the Lord. So she says, Shrutva gunan bhuvana sundara shrinvatam te. So hearing about you and descriptions of you, right? Tavakatam itam tapta jivanam kavibir iditim kamasha avaham, as in the Gopi Gita. So she's saying, hearing about you, the concept of your divine form came to me, and I understood not only that you're the most beautiful thing in the world and beyond this world, but Srinvatamte, I understood why we have the sense of hearing. That's Rishikesha. Rishikesha Sevanam. You think, hearing about you, I understand why hearing exists. Not that this is a good thing to do with your ears or your auditory system. You know, if you find some time, hear something about Krishna. She's saying, no, I can understand. This is what it's meant for. We use it for many other things. And therefore, and what happens? So many other types of forms and images enter your mind, consciousness, heart. You can't escape this unless you're have superior engagement, right? Vishaya vinivartante nirahara shadehina rasovarjam rasopyasya parandrishtva nivartate. Krishna is saying in the Gita, you won't be successful at meditation if you're not given some superior thing to meditate on. Right? So param drishtva means a superior experience, but it also means a superior way of seeing, which comes back to hearing, sravanam, sravanam kirtanam Vishnu smaranam. So then she says, Srinvatamte nirvisya karna vivarai haratonga tapam. And this hearing about you and thus conceiving of your divine form and qualities and pastimes. Pastimes means the possibility of active engagement in the positive spiritual domain, not being a passive observer, but an active participant in Leela. That is the message of the Bhagavatam. Right. Srila Prabhupada mentioned this in the beginning of his purports. He's saying that by Mayavadis, impersonalist philosophies, denying the personality of Godhead, that means one aspect, if not one of the most important aspects of personality, is Eros, the erotic principle. So saying they're indirect when they deny the personality of Godhead, they're denying the possibility of Eros being expressed spiritually, leaving one with the conclusion that the only plane that's possible to express this tendency is in this world. I mean, it can sound shocking or surprising, but this is what is being said. Right? It has to be dealt with very delicately. We were speaking at the Madan Mohan temple in Vrindavan of Srila Sanatana Goswami Prabhu, who's the Sambandhigyan Acharya, right? Sometimes called Bhakti Siddhanta Acharya. Sambandha, understanding the relationship, what is what. And you could say the relationship between, you know, mundane sexuality, spiritual sexuality, mundane Eros, spiritual Eros. Right? So it is not a coincidence that his deity, the deity of Sanatana Goswami and Samanigyan, is Madan Mohan. So as we, given credit to Bhakta Freud, that he discovered that he found the Eros is the driving principle of material existence. He believes it's really ultimately the only thing that's behind everything. He has an extreme position on this. And I'm not here to argue his case or not, but just to accept this much of it. He's there, you know, it's a controversial subject for many, the implications of that. But just on this point, that there's some substance there, that it is the original driving principle behind everything. This we can accept. Janmad yasya yataha, in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, that it's identical to Vedanta Sutra Sloka. So why would it be in both places? Is it redundant? Or is what is being expressed in the Bhagavatam, say, a deeper level reading of what was given in Vedanta? Because otherwise, Janmad Yasya Yataha in Vedanta Sutra, and Janmad Yasya Yatonvayadita in the first verse of the Bhagavatam. So we're told, Tree of Veda, what is it? Kalpataru, desire tree, fulfills all your desires. And you know, in polite company, we're like, oh, I guess, you know, we have so many different desires. And but then someone might think, like, fulfills all your desires? You mean like all of them? You mean like every possible desire you could have kind of desire? No one wants to say it. It means like, you mean the tree of the Veda can address Eros? It must. So, but interestingly, that tree, and this is noteworthy of Vedic culture in general, we know, well, people want to do all kinds of things. There's not just one kind of way they want to go. They want to go in many different ways. Right? We can say, well, vegetarian diet, that is very good for someone who wants to make rapid spiritual progress. And as you engage in spiritual culture, you should be more thoughtful about your diet, your occupation, about everything. Right? Even, you know, what you wear, and so, it can be so many things. But we say, well, what about for the non-veg section? As I told when I was on the flight once, and the Indian gentleman next to me, he says, oh, I see you're taking, you know, vegetarian. I go, yes, I've been a vegetarian. He goes, I'm also a vegetarian. I went, oh, that's very nice. He goes, I'm taking non-veg also. I'm like, oh, well, then you're better than me. You know, taking veg and non-veg. Isn't it? So, yes, sir. But what about that? Shouldn't there be advice or a path for everybody, whatever their situation is? So that's when you say Vedas, they're Kalpataru, it's a desire tree. They have prescriptions there for everybody and every situation, whether you're predominated by the mode of ignorance, the mode of passion, or the mode of goodness, or any combination thereof. They've got some advice for you, how from your situation, your karmic circumstance that you've generated, by the way, but still from there, how, and that, it's like GPS, spiritual GPS. When you do the GPS, you need to know, like, they go, you know, allow to, like know where you are. You know, like, okay, all right. Then it shows, all right, you're right here. And then what's the thing? Directions. And from here, we now know where you are on the map. Then we're saying, here's your goal. So depending on what your goal is, then they tell you, here are the directions. Here's how far it is. Here's how much time it's likely to take. And here's one or two ways to get there. There's some similarity there. So when we identify, if it's identified properly where we are, The Vedas have a prescription to you. All right, from your position, considering it, and what is your goal, right? The prayojan that you're trying to achieve, here's how you can achieve that. Basically, Guru Maharaj sometimes said in summary form that Varnashram Dharma, as it's been understood, described, is a systematic way for society as a whole to march out of the external material world toward Vaikuntha. That's a very grand notion, and it has its appeal. But a time-consuming project, to say the least. So the Vedas, that desire tree, they'll give you whatever you want, really, truly, whatever you want. They've got a path for you to achieve that. But this, what is the Bhagavatam? That was first verse, third verse saying, the Prayojan Tattva Slok, Nigama Kalpataro Galitam Palam, Shukamukaram Ritradavasamyatam, Pibata Bhagavatam Rasamalayam, Muhuraho Rasika Bhuvi Bhavuka. Saying, what is the presented in the Srimad Bhagavatam is the Kalpataro is mentioned there, Nigama Kalpataro Galitam, Shukamukaram. Pibata Bhagavatam Rasamala. It's saying, this is the, pardon me? Yeah, the fully matured, ripened fruit of that tree of Veda. Right? That's what's being presented in the Bhagavatam. So that tree that can fulfill all these desires, really, it's producing this fruit. Raso varjam raso pyasya parandrishva nivartate. That really in that fruit is concentrated sweetness, madura rasa. This is the ultimate object. This is what that tree was meant to produce. You can use it for other things and go in other directions, but really this is the purpose of that tree. And it's this fruit of this sweet nectarine substance, madura rasa, that will fill your heart's inner desires. So, Veda, Kalpataru, Vedanta Sutra, the flower on the tree, Bhagavatam, the fruit. So what is that Bhagavatam? Janmadyasya yataha. Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur saying, because you can break it down to Janma, Adi. Janmadi sometimes mean like birth, etc., like birth, maintenance, and it can mean many things, etc. But Vishwanath always extracting, with great depth, but also taking in a particular direction, says it's a reference to Madhura Rasa. What he says is Adi Rasa. He interprets the Adi as Adi Rasa, which means the original Rasa, Madhura Rasa. And that means the erotic principle. And this is interesting. So Guru Maharaj will say, Adi Rasa, if it's the original, that means all the others are, he sometimes says, customers, clients, satellites, but necessary. It does not exist in a vacuum. For there to be, there must be friendship, familial affection, master-servant relationship, passive, neutral. All these things should be there. But it's saying they've actually descended, or for lack of a better word, from Madhura Rasa. Or extensions would be a better word. So when Guru Maharaj mentions Madhvacharja, And he's talking about any object in the world, and it has a name for that. Right? So he's saying, there's a thing, the devata of that thing, the guru of that thing, the guru tattva going to Nityananda, and then ultimately Radha Govinda Chit Lilamritam, Radha and Krishna. So like we'll say sometimes, like, you know, there's what would be Vayu, air, and then the god of the air, the guru, the Nityananda, guru, tattva, principle, and then Radha and Krishna. So he's saying any object in this world, it can be traced back to this original position. And Guru Maharaj like to say, he says, I say just the opposite. There's Radha and Krishna, and then Nityananda, then guru, tattva, then the devata, then that thing. Right? So he's saying everything, this is subjective evolution of consciousness on a very advanced level. He's saying really, they are the source of everything. So when we think of anything in this world, our meditation, if you will, is to trace it back to the original. So Madhva says, like, the words that indicate the objects of this world, that's like putting reins on a horse and riding it in a particular direction. He's saying, but if you take the reins away from the horse will run as it pleases, right? Where it feels compelled to go. So he said, all these words and concepts, we've given them local context. Right? But if we release the local context and allow them to go toward the ultimate and absolute context, he said, they will run to Krishna conception. So we're told for the Mahabhagavata, the highest level devotees, they see Krishna everywhere and everything, internally, externally, everything reminds them of Krishna. Right? That's the highest culture. For the devotees who just went to Jagannath Puri, we're told in the Charitamritam, it mentions about Mahaprabhu, and it's the word Brahm is used, generally like Brahm, Pramad, Viparlipsha, Karna, Pataba. We're told these are the four defects of conditioned souls. One is like to make mistakes, to be illusioned, imperfect senses, and what is it? Deluded. Anyway, pardon me? Cheating propensity. There you go. So, but here, it's saying Mahaprabhu, from his position, what is his Brahm? Is that he mistakes the mundane for the divine. So when he sees a sand dune, that Chatak Parvat, he's seeing Govardhan. Just the inverse. When the person in the lesser position is seeing Govardhan, they're just seeing a hill or a mountain or something. Right? The inverse. When they're given exposure to ostensibly divine things, they're seeing them as mundane. We're told just the inverse is there for someone advanced and adept in spiritual culture. They're seeing the mundane in terms of its spiritual potential. So that is culture, that is meditation, right? It is a lesser position to try, just merely try and shut the world out, right? You know, pratyaksha, paroksha, aparoksha, adhoksaja, aprakrita. Pratyaksha means individual experience, what we're seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling, feeling, personally. Right? And we draw, on the basis of those observations, we draw conclusions. But then we realize the necessity of adding the experience of others. So we say like, hey, have you seen that? Just a simple thing like that. Something you haven't seen. Did you see that? It could be anything. It could be a movie, it could be a person, it could be, you know, something you're looking for. Did you see that? It's that simple act. We realize, I don't see everything. So I'm asking you, did you see it? So now I'm expanding, I'm realizing, because, all right, at least, you know, four eyes are better than two. So I saw certain things, you saw, right? It's actually very simple on one level. Because we think, well, you know, there's so many analytics and big data and this, you know, it's just, it's no more than this. Did you see it? Right. So we're saying, I want to expand the range of what I can see by including what you've seen. And while we're at it, let's include everybody else. Did anybody see it? And say, well, in this group, this is what we've seen. So now this is paroksha. See, you look at the word aksha is in each thing. Pratyaksha, individual seeing, but in terms of all the senses. Paroksha means para aksha, what was seen by para, others. So now we're expanding the range of the senses to include what we've all seen, heard, tasted, smelled, etc. But then we realize, all right, there are people who live before us, right? What you call like inherited wisdom. People lived, you know, hundreds of years ago, thousands of years ago. They made certain observations about life and experience. We want to, have a share in their wisdom. So we have collective human wisdom. And then we have, with the advent of the internet and Google, the idea that their proposition is the sum total of all knowledge will be made available to everyone at all times for free. Right? With ads, you know, but free. Right? So no qualification. Sum total of all human experience, acquired knowledge, you know, and we know in some instances, not reliable, maybe untrue, false, but whatever it is, it's all gonna be there and accessible to everyone 24 hours a day for free. So people think, well, that's a good idea. And certainly, of course it is for certain things, but to cut to the chase, as Guru Maharaj would say, the sum total of the finite is never equal to the infinite. It's not helpful when it comes to knowing about the infinite. So, and where in that case, he says, if the infinite can, the finite, when someone challenges saying, if the finite can know the infinite, it's not infinite? Guru Maharaj's answer was, if the infinite cannot make himself known to the finite, he's not infinite. And therein lies our prospect and the prospect of theistic culture. But so there are some who assume, when we talk about acquired prejudice, acquired tendency, they would say, well, really, aparoksha, get rid of all these things. That's misleading. Back to Brahma, Pramada, Vipra, Lipsha, Karna, Pattava. Since the senses are unreliable and commit mistakes and we have a tendency to cheat, all these things, like all of this so-called knowledge is suspect. If we really want to get at the self, we should just remove all of it, right? Enter a sort of tabula rasa type state, right? Like virginal, free from any sort of impression, right? Because they're all misleading, right? And go into what Guru Maharaj's samadhi, they compare to a deep sleep. Like in a very deep sleep, no experience. There's one like the dreaming stage, that's one thing. But in a very deep sleep, nothing. And for some people to say, well, that sounds like a great relief compared to the situation I'm in at present. So it seems desirable from a certain point of view to go in that sort of, again, neutral position. But because our nature is to be active, to see, hear, taste, touch, smell, feel. Again, we'll have to come out of that position and then likely to be brought down, seduced by so many substitutes instead of Hrishikesh, the persons, places, things of this world, and then we're back to square one. And so pratyaksha, paroksha, aparoksha. But then the Vaishnavas, they come and say, adhoksaja, again, aksha, adha aksaja, saying, there is a plane where by experiencing that, it comes down to you, the infinite making itself known to the finite, it comes down to you and suppresses your mundane experience. It suppresses your tendency to see the divine as mundane, to see the internal as external, etc. Adhoksaja, it descends. Right? And that's what is known as the Vaikuntha realm. And Adhoksaja is the name of Krishna. So each one of those has the word aksaja in it, which means eyes or seeing. Pratyaksha, paroksha, aparoksha, adhoksaja. And Sukadeva Goswami gives himself as an example. We're told, you talk about meditation and meditation abilities. Like when he was in the womb of his mother, he was a liberated soul. Right? And he's like growing there. He didn't come out for like 16 years. You're just not coming out. Because you think, what is the difference? And, you know. So he's fully developed inside his mother. But then he comes out into this world. And remember, he's the speaker of the Bhagavatam, or as Guru Maharaj sometimes says, the loudspeaker of the Bhagavatam. It's through Sukadeva that all of this is expressed, and that's not a coincidence. Because the introduction to the Bhagavatam, the introductory chapters, have these little fragments here and there that you can think, what is the purpose of giving this information? Is it just anecdotal? Oh, by the way, this happened. It's not like that. So when it says, before Sukadeva Goswami, when he's being introduced to the assembly of the greatest sages, they've assembled from all over the universe. Parikshit Maharaj has been cursed to die within 7 days. He's on the banks of the Jamuna, a place called Sukertal, outside of Delhi. He's the king of India. He's cursed to die in 7 days, sitting on the banks of the Jamuna. And all the great sages of all the different schools of thought assemble from all over the universe. That's very significant. It's setting the stage for the Bhagavatam. And this is before the arrival of Sukadeva. And they're asking him, like, what do you think about meditation? You know, he's asking them, do you think I should meditate? Well, there's dhyana, tapa, you know, dan, giving in charity, performing austerities, different types of meditation. They're all giving advice according to what was helpful to them, which makes sense. I mean, they're bona fide in the sense that in good faith, they're saying, this is what helped me overcome the mundane, so I'm recommending this. Someone else, well, this helped me, or maybe it should be a combination there. And Parikshit Maharaj is saying, I have 7 days, right? And I appreciate the advice that you're all giving, but it seems to me I could devote a lifetime to any one of these pursuits. So because I'm short of time, I would like you all get together and present the consensus to me of what you think. I want a unanimous verdict, something that you will all agree on. Right? Then Sukadeva comes. And these, as Gurudev is saying, they're big, they have like big long beards, you know. And who comes? A 16-year-old boy who's totally naked, right? And a group of small children following him are like throwing things at him, shouting things as one does. And but Sukadev, he's all these sages look at him, and you can Gurudev knew by heart the descriptions of the beauty of Sukadev Goswami. There's a whole description of his body. He is incredibly beautiful, too. So this 16-year-old naked boy, it said Digambara. Says this is in Sanskrit poetry, instead of saying he was naked, it says Digambara, says he was wearing the directions. Like, what was he dressed in? North, south, east, west, up, down, like that's, and they don't say he was naked, they just say Digambara, he was wearing the directions. And but these sages, they can see just by his physical structure, stature, and anatomy that he is like an elevated spiritual personality. His waist, his neck, many things are described. They can understand this person is of extraordinary realization. So although he's 16 years old, and there are many elderly senior sages there, he's elevated to the presidential position. Right? And sometimes Guru Maharaj will mention, even Vedavyasa and Narada are in the audience. That means like Guru and Param Guru. And Guru Maharaj is saying, they would say, because Vedavyasa instructed him, he said, let's see, you know, what we gave to the boy, how it's going to come out in a new color. They're like, very eager to hear that. And what does Sukadev begin? I'm saying that, as Purgat Maharaj says, what is the duty of one in life, specifically for one who is about to die? So, because we think, oh, someone who's about to die, they'll be given one advice. Someone who's got a full life ahead of them, maybe they'll be given some other advice. Actually, there's one advice given in both cases. So he said, what is the duty of one life specifically for one who's about to die, but not limited to? And Sukadev Goswami, what does he say? Prajna. He's saying, your question is glorious, he's saying, because this is the question that should be asked by everyone, always. So this is a glorious question in and of itself. And it's not only beneficial for you, it's beneficial for everyone in every stage of life. Tasmad bharata sarvatma bhagavan ishwaropani shrotavyas kirtitavyas cha smartavyas chechtatabhayam. Saying under all circumstances, one should hear about, chant about, and remember Krishna. And this way, smartavyas chechtata, with this sort of remembrance, one will become abhay, fearless. Because we're living in the world of mortality, we always, whether in the foreground or the background, we're always fearful, we're in anxiety. The mosquitoes are here, everything. Does this one have Zika? Is this one of those? I have to worry about that. I do. But we know it. So we have to think, oh, is it one of those? Is this water polluted? Is the air polluted? So many things. Foreground or background. We're in the world of mortality. Makes one feel anxious. Right? Smartavyas chechtatabhayam. By hearing and chanting, remember, one will remember Krishna and become free from fear. And the fear that accompanies identifying with the body as oneself. Right? And the dissolution of the body as the end of existence. How horrible. But Sukadev gives himself as an example because he's legendary. Because they're saying, oh, this is that Sukadev that we heard of, but we never met, you know. Because about being liberated in the womb of his mother. They're all giving advice on the basis of what was helpful to them. Sukadev was never under the influence of Maya. He's in the Nirguna plane. And he's legendary for that, and they know that. And that's why he's the speaker of the Bhagavatam. In this case, he's a Brahmavadi. He's in the position of a Brahmavadi previously. Right? Not Mayavadi, Brahmavadi. He said Mayavadi, Aparadi, they're offenders. They deny the personality of Godhead. Brahmavadi means fully realized, absorbed in Brahman, which is the outskirts of the Nirguna plane. So he says, Parinishtitopi Nairgunye Uttama Shloka Lilaya Grihita Cheta Rajar Se Akyanam Yadaditavan. I was situated in the Nirguna plane, that means beyond Tama, Raja, Sattva, ignorance, passion, goodness, beyond the mundane. I was situated, and then what happened? Uttama Shloka Lilaya. I heard, like Rukmini, I heard about Krishna and the pastimes of Krishna and the potential there for a life of love with Krishna in the spiritual world where Eros is reality. He's saying, and what happened is I was carried away to a world that I didn't know existed previously. And why is this significant? Back to those fragments, when it's mentioned, some backstory of Sukadev, when he left his father's house, Veda Vyasa's ashram, on the banks of the Saraswati in the Himalayas. He is walking by a pond where they're called, described as Dibya Devis, the bathing naked, women bathing naked. And when Sukadev comes, they don't bother to cover themselves. They feel no shyness or no shame. Okay. And he goes on, Vedavyasa is chasing after, oh, my son, my son. And Sukadev's merging into the forest and can't find them. But he says, when Vedavyasa comes, the same women cover themselves. And he's the great Vedavyasa, this great sage, you know, Bhagavan Bhadarayana and everything. And he can't help us notice that. He's saying, when my son went by, you didn't bother to cover yourself. I'm here. And they're saying, we can see that in his eyes, there's not even a trace amount of lust or exploiting tendency toward ladies. With the implicate, but they're covering themselves in front of Vedavyas. So why this is critical, Sukadev's a Brahmavadi, he has no interest in the mundane erotic principle. He's already been certified to be not a trace amount of that sort of exploiting tendency is within him. And that person that I heard about the pastimes of Radha and Krishna and the Braja Gopis, and I was totally charmed and carried away to a world I didn't know existed previously. So this is a way of certifying the utmost purity of the Aprakrita Leela of Krishna, the human-like pastimes of Krishna, and the pastimes of Radharani and Braja Gopis. There's Eros, but it has nothing to do with the mundane erotic principle. So Madan Mohan, Madan means Cupid. The whole world is under the influence of Cupid. Madan Mohan means who is so beautiful and charming that Cupid is bewildered. The world's bewildered by Cupid, we're told, but Cupid's bewildered by the beauty, charm, and sweetness of Krishna. So it means that hearing about Krishna has the Vidyate hridaya granti chidyante sarva sankshaya, has the capacity to cut the knots, the stranglehold that lust, mundane erotic principle, has on the heart, to cut that to pieces and release the heart's actual loving tendency and capacity with the illusion to, that the possibility that this principle has its pure and proper expression in the highest aspect of the spiritual world, in the Aprakrita Lila of Krishna, the divine pastimes of Radha and Krishna, and the Vraja Gopis. So, in summary, Saraswati Thakur, Pujala Raghapat, Gauravabhange, that's very high. You can understand that. Pujala Raghapat, Gauravabhange, Mahatala Sarujana Bishairange. So that's kept above as the plane of our service aspiration. And then here, one step removed in this world, what the situation we find ourselves in as aspiring servitors, we concentrate ourselves in service to that higher plane. And that, you can say, is our meditation. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, whatever inconvenience, apparent inconvenience, is associated with service to that plane, that is my happiness. And Guru Maharaj says, and that keeps you concentrated and focused. Our, that plane, what is Bhaktivinoda Thakur? How long can we concentrate or focus on that? Bhaktivinoda Thakur says it's like lightning. Right? Lightning strike. And when there's lightning, momentarily, there's everything we see. Like in the dead of night, in Narayana, there's lightning and everything's revealed for a moment and then it goes back. And so he's saying, so if you try to say, well, we have a glimpse of that plane. I'm going to read this section of the Bhagavatam or Charitamrita again and extend that experience. Not going to happen. Then Krishna withdraws because we're making it an object instead of offering ourselves as objects to this subjective plane. We're taking the subjective world as an object of our experience. And that's the antithesis of spiritual culture. So it comes down, the infinite reveals itself to the finite according to his sweet will. So we don't see that the gopis, they're meditating in the conventional sense. We see they're making, churning butter, yogurt, they're herding the cow. They're doing so many things. And while doing that, they're singing songs about Krishna, sharing stories about Krishna, remembrances of Krishna, sometimes enacting the pastimes of Krishna. That they do. But on the theme of Adhoksaja, when Uddhava brings his message to the Braja Gopis, when Krishna's in Mathura Dwarka and they're feeling separation, so he sends Uddhava with a message for them. Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur gives another meaning of Adhoksaja, which can also mean close your eyes. So Uddhava tells the message from Krishna is saying, if you will all close your eyes, Krishna will appear within you internally. He said, that's another meaning of Adhoksaja. So, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, hearing, chanting, remembering, would almost be seva, service. Converting non-Krishna into Krishna is to go from the external aspect of something to its internal aspect. Hare Krishna.